Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Science of Melanology presented by Dr. Jewel Pookrum. All recorded and printed materials are copyrighted by the Jewel Publications, Inc., a subsidiary of the House of Jewels. Any unauthorized duplication of these materials is strictly prohibited. Our commitment is to connect with those who want to discover and learn the science of life and the science of living. For additional books, MP3, Mayan calendars, Immortal Chat CDs, registration for the Balancing Program, and the Advanced Balancing Workshop, please visit our website, thejewelnetwork.com, or call 602-559-1842. That's thejewelnetwork.com. Or call 602-559-1842. Thank you.
Greetings, everyone. How are you? You have just tuned in to the Melanology Show. I am your host, Dr. Jewel, and you are listening to the Melanology Show on the Jewel Network. And as you know, the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, is dedicated to broadcasting the science of life and the science of living. And the Melanology Show is devoted to describing, dissecting, explaining, and revealing the science behind this, what used to be mystical and very misunderstood, natural, physiological pigment known as melanin, present in all forms of life, even the forms of life that may appear to have white fur or to have white skin, etc., they still have melanin. So what we have now discovered is that it is the amount of melanin, it is the location of the melanin that is determined by the expression of genes that gives us these very, very unique appearances. Therefore, what we have now recognized is that in the human species of life, the genetic genome, the makeup, is 99.9% the same. For all of the appearing differences in the race family, there's only one race. That is the human race that scientifically is known as the Negroid race, being of darkness or pigment. And so whether the evolution based on the activation or deactivation of specific genes causes the individual to be totally void of pigmentation in the hair, in the eyes, in the skin, and in other parts of the body, they still are of the same race family, the Negroid race. If they are what scientifically we term as melanin recessive individuals, they appear to have peach pink skin color to an olive beige color. They still are of the Negroid race. However, we have identified that on chromosome number 11, loci number 6, the gene responsible for producing tyrosinase is of low activity. So the amount of melanin that is produced is low in content. Now, ironically, but it would make very good sense, that in all of these variations in the one human race, everyone, whether they are not able to produce much pigment at all, which has been labeled as a disease known as albinism, or whether they are navy blue-black, as many of our Senegalese or our Maasai family members near the equator in Africa and in the desert or the Sahara that make copious, tremendous amounts of melanin, it is because the gene at loci number 6 on chromosome number 11 is extremely, or what we would say, hyperactive. But the melanocyte count is still the same throughout the entire human species. So we recognize then that it's not as though there are some groups in our race family that have more melanocytes than others. It's not the number of melanocytes, it's the amount of melanin content within the melanocyte. And that amount of melanin within the melanocyte is determined primarily by just a few factors. First of all, attitude is everything. So the attitude, the state of consciousness of the individual is always the main controller of turning on or turning off genetic capabilities. One, attitude also is highly influenced by environment. And so we know that these large groups of individuals located in different environments also have helped to form and shape the outlook or the attitude of the individual, which then is translated through the genes in the genome to create what we call scientifically a phenotype, that is a physical presentation that allows individuals to have different amounts of melanin, and also it causes the melanin to appear to have various shades of color. Now, with this amount of melanin we're finding out, and melanin has been researched intensely since the 1700s with even the crude technology that was available then, it was still observed as a curiosity, and those individuals with very investigative minds have been taking adventures of attempting to understand and to know what this pigment does, how it functions, why it varies in different groups of our human species, as well as in animals, insects, and within the plant world. So I do want you to know that melanin is not something that has been neglected at all in an attempt to try to understand what it does and how it functions. It is very much well understood how it functions. However, this information has not been made privy to the general public, and the care for melanin, the understanding of how to handle it on a daily basis within our avatar, our physical body, how to nourish it, how to cleanse it, how to ensure that it functions at its greatest capabilities, are really mysterious and are just totally unknown by most people. The present state of consciousness, as we know, is a troublesome one regarding the melanin, as we call it scientifically, polymer, because it's a huge, large combination of many smaller molecular structures. It's a huge composite of molecular structures, so we call it a polymer. And again, the social, political attitudes have literally reigned free, and all of its misinformation associated with it that has caused much, much pain, tremendous amounts of psychological trauma, and has caused tremendous bloodshed. So up to this point in time, and we are just so proud of the Melanology Show that it has taken upon itself to inform and educate the entire globe about the factual attributes and capabilities of this fabulous pigment. Now, I want to make it very clear that as we look at our wonderful flowers, for those of you who are horticulturalists, who love flowers, as we love to look at the various iridescence and beautiful pigments on our insects, etc., you are still looking at the melanin molecule. Now, you may want to ask yourself, well, why don't I have a huge, beautiful aqua turquoise skin color like the large South American Mexican moths? Well, again, attitude is everything, and also, in this case, the genetic complement obviously is slightly different in humans than it is in insects. But throughout the insect population, their genetic genome is just about as standard as ours. 99.9% of all insects have the same genome, but their environment and their function is what turns on or turns off their genes so that they can specifically and in full capability be able to actualize their proposed function within the order and the system of things in the insect world to help sustain and maintain normal biological processes so that all life on the planet can thrive. So when you're looking at the purple on a flower, you're looking on the iridescence of a beetle's wing, you're looking on the beautiful hues of yellow and gold and orange on the butterflies, and the fabulous pigmentation of even the variation in green throughout nature known as chlorophyll, you are looking at less evolved form of the superior melanin molecule that you see in humans. And that's very important to understand. So even within our own race family, we are very much aware that even what appears to be amelanated individuals who have been labeled to have a disease known as albinism, they still have melanin. The content, however, is the lowest it can be for an entity, a life form that can survive in this standardized electromagnetic spectrum, that is because of the sun. If we took biopsies and then put their tissues under light microscopes, electron microscopes, we would see that their nucleus of the cells also are dark, just like every other member of the human species, and that all their genes are cloaked in melanin, just like ours. However, in the more generalized areas of the body, the melanocytes in the skin, the rods and cones in the eye, specific areas of the brain, have very, very small amounts of melanin. And again, the TYR gene on loci number 6, chromosome number 11, is very, very much hypoactive. Now, again, everything is controlled primarily by states of consciousness, attitude, and then attitude determines how the organism will interact in its environment. And so, therefore, understanding this, individuals with albinism can also turn on genes or turn off genes to change their behavior, their ability to adapt, and then also their phenotype, their appearance. So we're just moving into this area of understanding in medicine for humans, where we're now just beginning to admit that we can help individuals change physical states of existence in their avatars, their bodies, by helping them to adapt, where we are very clear now there's no such thing as multiple races. What we have in the human race family are variants of the one human race. And I do want to bring it to your attention that we scientifically know that the correct and original spelling in the English language of human was spelled H-U-E-M-A-N. And for those of you who are linguistic masters, you understand that through the process of Grimm's laws and a few other laws, you can legitimately add to or drop letters from a word that will change their sound, but also can over time alter their meaning. And so we understood that there was only one race family and that their color, known as hue, H-U-E, varied. So over time, the E was dropped, and for those individuals who have not done their recent etymologic evaluations of the words they use to describe the objects in their reality, they probably have never thought about the fact that even though they do see that there is a fabulous, beautiful hue of color amongst our species as humans, they probably have never thought to make the association that the more accurate description of our species would be human, H-U-E, as opposed to H-U. So just contemplate that and recognize that, you know, we have so many things that are right before our very eyes. And again, we kind of take that for granted and we don't really acknowledge what we see. So that is just a cute way of segueing into the major scientific discourse for today. And that addresses what is very pathognomonic for melanin, and that is light. L-I-G-H-T. Melanin, as we said earlier, simply is the biological, physical form of light in its most solidified existence, biologically. Of course, we know that our mineral world is crystallized light, but it is inert. That is, that it is definitely not a constantly changing, or should I say, spontaneously changing organism as a biological organism responds to its environment, which is what makes something animate versus inanimate, something that continuously carries on chemical, biological activities and demonstrates change as well as growth and development, which is what we call life. And the melanin molecule certainly is a living biological form. However, its full function is directly associated in all ways with the electromagnetic spectrum. I like to refer to it as the magneto-electric spectrum, and how the organism that possesses melanin is able to interact directly with all of the wavelengths of light. So let's look at this in a little more detail. And today I am going to share with you the information documented in my publication, Vitamins and Minerals from A to Z with Ethno-Consciousness. And I wrote the first publication of this book in 1993. Wow, that's just surprising to me, 1993. And I wrote this out of a frustration, but a consistent pattern that I was seeing in the traditional medical environment. And when we would make grand rounds, we would also have something known as CMEs, or continuing medical education seminars, and that's where doctors are briefed by scientists and other researching doctors about illness and conditions that have been discovered that can help ameliorate these conditions in our society and the human population. So we come together on a regular basis, and the sophisticated, well-trained scientists, researchers, and physician scientists and researchers present to each other what they've discovered as they've observed certain disease functions. Up until probably just the last 15 years, all continuing educational conferences always address disease, etc. We have not been a medical institution that focused primarily on prevention. We have not done that. And so, obviously, we now recognize that that was a oversight, a huge oversight, like almost, you know, a partial blindness on our part, and that much of the disease that we see and we continue to have to deal with comes from not focusing and establishing very logical guidelines and providing very systematic educational opportunities for the general public to learn how to take care of themselves. And so we'll talk about that a little later. But in the process of going to CMEs, that's a criteria to maintain your state license, your national license, it was always given that certain populations in our race family would have certain diseases, that they would follow a pattern of deterioration and would die. It was always very interesting that in the CMEs, it was always identified that the aspect of our race family that was heavily melanated would have severe diseases where the response to treatment would be minimal, and the morbidity and the mortality from these diseases would be extremely high. And these projections would be made up to 5 or 10 years prior to the date of receiving the information. So why would the incidence of lung cancer be 75%, for example, in the metropolitan areas, in the major cities that had a large population of melanin-dominant individuals? Or why would that be the case, as opposed to individuals that lived in the suburbs, et cetera, who appear to be pheomelanated or melanin recessive? And so I just said, you know, what is going on, and how today can you tell me how many of these individuals are going to succumb to this disorder, that they literally are going to experience their mortality, and you're telling me this is going to happen to them 5 years from now. Why wouldn't it be 15, or why wouldn't it be 20? Well, they never could answer my question, but I always noted that there was the description of the population of humans that were going to have these different variations in disease response, it was always directly associated with the amount of melanin that was contained in their skin. And even though we talked about melanin in our early scientific education in the first 2 years of med school, and even in our clinical training, et cetera, there were always certain diseases associated with melanin and also locations that you may dwell within on the planet, you know, tropical diseases and that kind of thing based on the environment, what you may be exposed to. But why was the morbidity and mortality so high for melanin-dominant individuals? And that just really bothered me. So I said, you know, I really need to look into this and really begin to study. Is there really some type of correlation between the differences in biological function, environmental response, and physiology relative to the amount of melanin content in, at that time, appearing in the skin? I was like, I was never taught this. This was never really exposed to me, you know. We know that, you know, if you were an African having been transported here to America, that there was a environmental adaptation, that if you came from the areas of Ghana, Nigeria, et cetera, where there was a high endemic of the malaria disorder carried by the mosquitoes, that these individuals had a particular quality that occurred in their blood known as sickle cell. So these are the kind of correlations that are made. However, people are not having sickle cell crisis in hundreds of thousands of individuals in these mosquito-laden areas. Well, why not? So if sickle cell is such a problem, why, with all the individuals who carry this trait in Africa, why aren't they just inundated with sickle cell crises? Well, that was observed not to be the case, but when they presented themselves here in America, now this particular quality of blood shape seemed to cause a problem. And that then problematic disorder was labeled as sickle cell disease. And it was never, ever explained to these individuals that sickle cell was an environmental adaptation. This still is not made very clear to individuals who carry this great capability to prevent being infected from the malaria parasite. The malaria parasite, as it goes through its different stages of metamorphosis, requires a host quality momentarily, and that is in the human inside the red blood cell. That organism then continues to multiply. It uses the red blood cell as its incubator. It ruptures out of the red blood cell after they've completed that stage of growth and development and moves on to its next stage. The rupturing of the red blood cell is the problem in the human because so many cells are ruptured at one time, and that causes definitely problems with what we call osmolarity of the blood, maintaining the relationship of hydrogen negative iron, too much release of too many minerals, etc. Definitely a problem with the liver being able to keep up with the amount of free iron based on the iron molecule inside the red blood cell that needs to be handled, as well as so many minerals being released that the kidney is responsible for filtering and recycling. Everything is overloaded, and so therefore there are multiple sequelae that cause these individuals to die. Now, what we finally discovered was something very unique that still is not being taught, and that is that when these individuals maintain adequate hydration, it's very important that individuals that have this trait, they have to maintain high levels of hydration. They also are very sensitive to digesting high amounts of salt. Sodium is a problem for this quality of blood. They have, has a tendency to hold on to excess water, and it just goes into a whole cycle of continued reactions that cause imbalances in this quality of body. But also sugar, which is also plays a very important role in how the cells handle water, is also not tolerated well, especially sugar that is not accompanied by all of the necessary minerals and vitamins for the body to produce insulin and to be able to utilize that sugar in its proper concentration in the cell so that it does not cause serious changes in the osmolarity of the blood. So with the introduction to this very ancient quality of blood, it's very old quality. This is not something just happened recently. and then moving into environments where the food quality is different and where the food has significant mineral deficiencies, B vitamin deficiencies, which happens when whole grains are processed. As you know, white rice is not natural. There's nowhere in the world that you will find white rice. It has to be processed to take on a white cast. And what happens is that all of the minerals, all of the bran is thrashed off of the surface of the rice. And that is why it now takes on the very raw or white appearance. But it's very harsh on the body unless the diet is supplemented through some other form of nourishment to accommodate the loss of those B vitamins, the magnesium, the chromium, the iron that is on these grains, as well as sugar, whether it comes from a sugar beet, whether it comes from a sugar cane, etc. There is no naturally occurring sugar that is ever white, because these plants know for a fact that they have to have on-site, even for themselves, to photosynthesize the accompanying minerals and vitamins so that the entire process of glycolysis, etc., can go on, and the system at the end can generate energy. And when any of these minerals and vitamins are missing, that interferes with catalytic activity, what we also know as coenzyme activity, and therefore at the end we get energy, but we also get a lot of other byproducts that the body now has to figure out how to eliminate, to neutralize and eliminate. And over time, it then requires to dip into its reserves to process these toxins, and then continuously eating foods that are nutrient deficient, then the reserves are exhausted, and then now we have to go into frank disease. So individuals that have this very ancient, very highly adaptive blood quality known as sickle cell, when they eat processed foods, processed diets, white sugar, white flour foods, et cetera, white breads, it in a very short period of time will definitely cause significant hemostatic disorders. And so, therefore, in America, because this basically was not a disease that was really handled with full instruction, looking at the history not only of how this environmental adaptation occurred, but also looking at the social, cultural behavior accompanying it, the foods that were eaten in the environment, and what this transition in cultural behavior, dietary practices, and also looking at the new attitudes that had to be adapted to and created to be able to survive here in an environment that was not 100% supportive of these individuals because of the projection on the pigment known as melanin, all precipitated a very stressful environment. And with the amount then of adrenaline continuously in the system, which also utilizes a tremendous amount of vitamins and minerals by the body, the individuals had severe problems. So with all of this being understood now, I recognize that there was more that met the eye than what I had been trained to know. So as with how life always works and how consciousness always precedes every physical event that happens in what we call our lives, I ask the question, is there really any real variations in physiology, in anatomy, in growth and development, in the different variants of melanin production in our single race family? And when I asked the question, it was just like magic that all of this information, starting from the 17th century, was put in my hand literally to inform me that decades and scores beyond, before my birth, that these variations had been documented and were literally just laying around in research publications that had never, ever been taught in the medical schools, that had never, ever been taught in our educational system or employed by the medical institution for the best interest of all of the citizens. And that was just astounding. I remember specifically that it just took me probably almost 2 months to get over the fact that there could be hundreds of thousands of research papers on this pigment known as melanin, but yet and still in my physiology book, in my anatomy book, in my micro, or what we call histology book, in my pathology training, there was very little utterance of this. I mean, I just was trying to figure out how could something like this have taken the attention of hundreds of people where millions and millions of dollars had been paid for this kind of research over centuries. And here I am, supposedly in one of the most critical and most important and sacred institutions handling the literal lives of individuals, and this vast amount of research had been withheld from my education. Now, perhaps some of you out there have recognized the fact that where there is variation in the amount of pigment in our single race family, also quality and information has varied. So therefore, you know, it has been alleged politically, socially, and economically that in melanin-dominant environments, the educational system is different, the information that's shared is different, and that is true at the economic, social, political level. But we know for a fact that wherever consciousness is, information also is there. And so it doesn't matter, regardless of whether there's a lot of money in your environment or not, we know that you can know whatever you want to know if you ask the question in your mind. And so we have people who grew up in very meager environments that have done very great things, not because they had a lot of money and that the schools they went to were the best, but they developed their mind because they wanted to develop it. And this is what has saved all of us as human beings, regardless of whether we are melanin dominant or recessive, in having experiences that we decide we want to master. So as all this information came to me, I was very surprised to recognize that I had a very large practice in Detroit at that time, which Detroit's location relative to Ann Arbor, Michigan, Ann Arbor is right behind us. And I was just surprised that the University of Michigan, its Department of Medical Anthropology and Human Ecology, was one of the largest storehouses of all of this information for centuries on human growth and development and the understanding and the evaluation of melanin. And I was like, right here at University of Michigan. That's amazing. Now, I want to bring this full circle to just let you know that I was trained at one of the best private medical schools. I was the first melanin-dominant woman to ever go to the med school that I attended, which had been established over 100 years. And this medical school, not only was it private, but it was also pristine in who it serviced, because what the med school that I was trained at is one of the main med schools that provides all of the specialists and highly qualified individuals that sustains the Catholic Church and the Vatican. So that whole area of the Catholic religion that provides that religion with all of its priests and all of its lawyers and all of its scientists and its nurses and its doctors and its accountants, that's known as the Jesuit division of the Catholic diocese. And so therefore I went to a Jesuit medical school, the first melanin-dominant female that had ever gone there. And if any of you know anything about the Catholic religion, they provide for themselves whatever they want to know. The Vatican has never been short on acquiring as much information as it can. As you know, it has in itself the Barberini Library that contains over 25 miles of catacombs of bookcases 9 feet high, loaded with books from information regarding all kind of things collected over centuries. So the Catholic religion is adamant about having information and disseminating it in such a way to ensure that its practitioners and those individuals that provide services for them have to have what is needed so that the service is, in their minds, divine. So I was exposed to a tremendous amount of information that I noticed that many of my colleagues in the medical schools that they attended to had never been exposed to. And even in my highly documented and highly diversified exposure to information, this information definitely had not been discussed and not been taught. So as I was granted permission to access the Medical Anthropologic Archives of the University of Michigan and interacted with the chairman of the department, the information that was given to me was just mind-boggling. So it then forced me to have to move into looking at physics and the physics of light and other areas relative to this pigment that we all have. So let's actually talk about an important aspect of our avatar, and that is known as the eyeball. So we're going to talk about light, and its main receptor directly to the brain is the eye. You are listening to The Melanology Show. I am Dr. Jewel, and you are tuned into the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living. So, in the first release of the book, Vitamins and Minerals from A to Z with Ethnoconsciousness, this book then was created and written to inform all of humanity, but especially two-thirds of humanity that have visible pigment in the hair, in the eyes, and in the skin, whether it was pheomelanin that allowed you to be olive brown, caramel brown, gold in color, or literally golden yellow, which is what has been the classification of individuals who live in the Asiatic areas on our planet, to brown, chestnut brown, chocolate brown, and navy blue black. It had never been written a book that totally addressed what's happening in the melanin molecule that causes these variations in color, and what does that mean if you have melanin that is reflecting these hues of color. From a medical perspective, what does that mean? It was never, ever addressed. And this is what this first edition of this book addressed. So we had to look at light. So many of us take for granted the light that permeates our environment and how it is responsible for everything that we can see, that we can hear, that we can feel, taste, and touch, and all of the sensations of which we as humans are aware of. This is contributed to our awareness that we define as an experience through this fabulous phenomenon known as light. Light consists of known frequencies that we have labeled electric waves, radio waves, infrared. We have sub-frequencies in infrared, such as shortwave infrared. In the visual light spectrum, we have what all of us are aware of, the red frequency of color, orange, yellow, green, and blue. And then this has been labeled as the visual light spectrum. And when all of these colors are resonating simultaneously together, what we see is literally white. So it's been called the visual light or white light spectrum of light. And as the wavelength shortens, we now move into what's known as ultraviolet. And each one of these major wavelengths of light have seven sub-components of variation of frequency. So there's seven levels of frequency of light in the ultraviolet spectrum of light. We have X-ray, and there's seven levels or seven vibrational frequencies of X-ray, seven vibrational frequencies of the gamma ray, cosmic waves, and TV waves. So these are all forms of light. And most of us recognize light as only being the colors identifiable in what is known as the visual spectrum of light. And it's a very, very small wavelength. So the colors ranging from red to violet form what is known as the white light spectrum, that all human beings, unless they are legally blind or outright blind, can see. However, all of the other rays that I've just listed to you also are considered light and are also present with the visual light spectrum. So there's no way that you can see orange or red or green or yellow through the eye, and also all the other spectrums of light are not also going through the eye too. So most human beings cannot look upon a plant or a flower or another human being and describe them by their infrared color or by their X-ray presentation or their gamma ray or their cosmic wave presentation. And we're going to talk about that much later as to why that can't be. But what we are experiencing now, and this is very important, that we have many of our children that are being born that can see in infrared. They don't need special monoculars or binoculars to be able to see at night. They can see in infrared. Now, you know, this is no big thing. We have nocturnal animals. That's primarily the process by which they see. They see best from the infrared frequency of light. Their rods and cones in their eyes have been specifically activated, and the area of the brain that processes infrared light is very well developed. And so that's why they don't have to have a visual light spectrum light bulb shining, a flashlight, a lantern, etc., for them to see everything that's going on. And what we are now recognizing that we have these same capacities, but that area of the brain, and most of us, has not become awakened. It has not become active enough, magnetic, electrically, so that our awareness can perceive that, oh, yes, I can see this person through my infrared awareness, that now I'm not seeing, you know, a visual light perception of them. I'm actually seeing them through infrared. Now, that occurs in the body through the process of melanin. You have to have melanin available to be able to naturally perceive any object in its infrared state of light vibration. Now, as we recognize that most of us are only seeing in a very small range of light vibration, known as the visual light spectrum, again, your eyeball is still perceiving all of the other available frequencies. So gamma rays and cosmic waves are also going into our eyes at all times, but our brains have not been activated, and our consciousness is not in those areas of the brain that can process infrared ultraviolet light. And so in your reality, you believe that you can't see in these frequencies. It's only a belief system. It's not a fact. It's only because in your awareness you haven't said yes, which means then that you'll begin to activate the gene that will then bring your awareness into those areas of the brain that have always processed cosmic rays and gamma rays and X-rays. But these areas of the brain cannot be made aware to you until your awareness moves there. We're going to talk about that a little later. So, therefore, what we have discovered is that all mass, all matter, is literally light and is the foundation for and is responsible for what we call our life. We have discovered this through the science known as quantum physics, and it's the mechanics of how quantum physics and what we call subatomic particle physics interacts that allows us to know light at a much more finite spectrum. It is important to recognize that the most important organ to receive light directly to the brain is the eyeball. And this is a very, very important form of nutrition. Now, understand what I said. I'm not, you know, jumping from subject to subject. I was saying that light to the eyeball is a very, very important form of nutrition. Our eyes use their basic nutritional food, which is light, to bring about health to the avatar or to the body. Now, even though we know about seasonal affective disorders and we know how we feel when we stay in darkness too long, we see the results of what happens to our avatar when there's not enough light, i.e., when we go to Europe, you'll see a tremendous amount of bone disorder. They have one of the greatest specialists in their medical training to handle all kind of arthritides and bone defects and muscle ligament joint disarticulations. And that is an environmental problem because their eyeball is not being nourished with adequate amounts of light most of the time. So this causes other deficiencies, vitamin D, you know, solanine, and just a lot of other things. So light also is important nutrition not only for the eyeball, which is the largest nerve directly off the brain, but for many, many metabolic, physiologic processes and the continuation of certain structures in our body. Very important. And we now know that melanin plays a strategic role in determining how much of the nutritional component known as light that the brain and also other areas of the body can handle. Now, since vision is truly an important aspect of our navigational system, taking in more information per unit of time and from a broader area of space than any of our other senses, it is useful to examine how our eyes use light and digest light to accommodate this task. Okay? Each eye, so let's look at the anatomy here of the eye. Each eye contains an average of 137 million photoreceptors. There are approximately 130 photoreceptors called rods and 75 million photoreceptors called cones in the back of the eyeball in each eye. Now, cones function primarily in daylight where we have full exposure to light and are concerned with visual acuity and color discrimination at high intensities of illumination. The rods, on the other hand, function primarily in twilight and at night and are mostly concerned with colorless vision and movement at low levels of illumination. The rods are also responsible for the relay of information concerning the non-visible spectrum of light. The rods inform the brain as well as the body about the amount of X-ray, radio waves, TV waves, infrared, electric, cosmic, gamma, and ultraviolet waves that the body is being exposed to. Now, this level of perception being the rods of the eye is directly dependent upon the amount of melanin in the rods. The pigment in the rods is known as rhodopsin, spelled R-O-D-O-P-S-I-N. And eyes that are pale in color, ranging from pink in individuals that are suffering from albinism to the range of hazel eyes, have a diminished capacity to perceive complete information regarding the intake and the exposure of non-visible spectrums of light and the amount that the body is actually being bombarded with from its exposure to bright light. The more melanin recessive, or should I say the more melanin dominant the eye, that is the amount of melanin that the eye contains, the more accurately the body is able to perceive the intensity and the degree of exposure to non-visible light spectrum activity. Now, it is also interesting to note that individuals with darker or more melanated eyes are more pigmented, and more pigments in the rods also have the built-in capacity to tolerate more of the non-visible spectrum. They are also capable of receiving information via the rods through the sympathetic nervous system, which is directly linked to the pineal gland, the hypothalamus, the pituitary glands, and other areas of the brain, such as even the limbic system, which is midbrain area, and that fabulous, very important area at the base of the brain known as the corpus callosum. Now, I won't go off into that because I really want you to get as much information as possible in here about pigmentation, the rods and the cones, and the amount of melanin in the eye. But as most of you recognize, I talk about the corpus callosum all the time because it is the main cable system that is responsible for shunting magnetic electric frequencies equally to the right and the left hemisphere of the brain. And when that corpus callosum has not been stimulated, where all of those fibers are able to transmit equally full capability of electromagnetic frequencies of light, then each hemisphere of the brain then is not illuminated in a balanced way where your awareness cannot then move readily to the left and the right hemisphere of the brain, and the neurons then do not make direct dendritic and axial connections where information can circulate freely from the right and the left hemisphere of the brain. The right and the left hemisphere of the brain has been a huge impediment in our capacity to figure out how to handle and to resolve lots of the problems that we've created because we have not been whole brain individuals. At the Jewel Network, we are justifiably enchanted with enlightened living because we know that when you know the science of who you are, the science of how to live a high-quality life, trust me, being enlightened is a glorious experience, and you will then receive the wonderful gift of being able to be here indefinitely because you finally became enlightened to really understand what this life is about and what it offers you. So we've been talking about melanin. We've been talking about how it's been one of the most researched biological substances known to the history of man, but very interestingly, there are very few people that know much about it, even though it's been studied for centuries. And there's been billions of dollars spent on trying to understand the peculiarities and the standards of what this pigment does. And we've discussed the fact that all other pigments, lycopene, that makes the tomato red, and all of these other various beautiful pigments, the blues and the greens and the purples, whether they're on insects or flowers or animals and their feathers and furs, are forms of melanin. It's very important to understand. All pigments are biological light in biological form. And melanin, the largest polymer, collection of molecules that allow photons, subatomic particles that form light, to have full capability of stabilizing themselves and yet still being able to shift their geometric patterns and to shift their variation in light reflection that allows us to see these beautiful hues of color. Melanin is biological living light, and we all have melanin. The key is the amount, and the amount of melanin that we have is controlled by two factors, attitude always, and then the attitude determines how our environment will be allowed to turn on or turn off our genes so that the body, your avatar, can make the proper adjustments to the amount of light and stimuli coming in from the environment, which is known as your life experiences. So we've gone on to talk about the fact that one of the most important areas of the brain that has to be nourished properly is the eyeball. It's the largest nerve that is directly exposed to the external environment, and the nutrition for the eye is exposure to full spectrum light. And when that does not occur, we have a lot of things that happen, but let's go on and understand the actual anatomy of the eye so that we can better understand why a lot of the things that we perhaps may do to our eyes or have allowed to occur is definitely going to have intense effects upon our awareness, upon our perception of what reality is to us, and definitely upon the functioning of the body. So, as I said earlier, the level of perception via the rods of the eye is directly dependent upon the amount of melanin or pigment in the rods. The pigment in the rods is also known as rhodopsin. Eyes that are pale in color, ranging from pink to individuals who have very, very little melanin production going on in their body, which is known as the disease albinism, to all ranges of hazel eyes have a diminished capacity to perceive complete information regarding the non-visible spectrum of light. So this is very important to understand because the non-visual spectrum of light contains all of the different frequencies of light that most individuals have declared that they don't see. That would be X-ray, radio waves, TV waves, infrared light, cosmic waves, gamma waves, and ultraviolet rays. Now, each of these major frequencies of light, wavelengths of light, contains seven subcomponents or sub-frequencies of light. And so, therefore, we are constantly absorbing not only white light, which is composed of the color spectrum that we're aware of, the yellow, the green, the blue, the red, the orange, and the purple, but also our body needs and has been prepared to handle X-ray, radio waves, TV waves, infrared waves, cosmic gamma waves, and ultraviolet. And we're going to talk about that, that whole wiring system that can handle each frequency of the full spectrum of light is known as the microtubule or carbule system. Now, that system does not work in most human beings at the moment because it requires awareness, first of all, that you have a system, and then, two, you then have to give yourself permission to use the system. And so some of you may be thinking, what? What did she say? We had to give ourselves permission to use the system. Well, yeah. So it's like you have feet on the end of your ankle, which is on the end of your leg, but you still have to give yourself, which is then your avatar, your body, permission to use the foot. Because if your body just jumped up and decided that it just wants to run across the room, and in your mind, it's like you're not wanting to move, I want to sit in a chair, you'd be very, very, very disturbed that my body has gone on and taken upon itself to get up and walk across the room when I distinctly had wanted to sit in the chair in my mind or at least not have any activity going on in my body. So believe it or not, attitude, this is part of the attitude. And individuals who have decided that they choose not to have full capability to interact with the full spectrums of light, they have turned down the function of genes located at loci number 6 on chromosome number 11. And these individuals appear to have very small amounts of pigment or color. And we call them albinos, to calling them melanin recessive individuals. Now, unfortunately, in the face of ignorance, the human has gone on to think that they were actually separate and that they actually came from different origins and have labeled that as race. But there's only one race on the planet, and that is known as the Negroid race, and that all humans have 99.9% the same genome. That is, all of their genes are the same, except 0.1%. And that is determined by states of consciousness and the environment. So that says a lot then, because that says that the person who is navy blue black, you have the same genes as they do. The key is, obviously, if you are melanin recessive, when you look in the mirror, it's like, well, if I have the same genes as a person who's navy blue black, why am I not navy blue black? Why do I have a peachy hue to my color, to my skin? And it is because the gene at loci number 6 on chromosome number 11, you have inadvertently turned down its function. And, of course, you're going to say to me, well, I don't remember doing that. I never said that, you know, I wanted to basically be susceptible to being sunburned, et cetera. I love the sun. And now that goes into what we call nighttime science. Wonderful geneticists here in Japan made that distinction of nighttime and daytime science. And he made it very clear that the daytime science or scientists are those individuals that do all the measuring and all the observation, and they measure everything, and they tell you the number of the items, and they tell you what it appears as though it looks like it does, and where you can locate it and how it basically appears to function and live. The nighttime science is the capacity to take this, what appears to be hardcore data or fact, and then contemplating it in the midbrain area allows information from what we call the levels of light that are not seen physically by the eye to now release their information about what it is that you are observing. And it's very profound that the capacity to explore and to extrapolate information via nighttime science is predicated on how much melatonin you make, which naturally begins to occur in the brain as the amount of visible light diminishes through the eyeball. So starting at 10 o'clock at night, the neurons of the brain, especially in particular sites, the pineal gland, etc., begin to make melatonin, melanin-stimulating hormone, and therefore contemplating on an observation made in the daytime in the presence of full-spectrum light now allows those frequencies of light that you normally do not perceive, infrared, ultraviolet blue, gamma waves, radio waves, to contribute their information to the neurons of your brain so that they are translated where they now have made you aware of certain potentials and capabilities, and that information is also released to the bloodstream so that, wow, eureka, this is what this is about. So nighttime science has really been the real mother lode that has actually promoted tremendous amounts of advancement in science and physics, etc. It was far beyond just what we can see and measure. It was actually the contemplation in the presence of melatonin that increased the activity of melanin, that is biological light in the brain, that you literally had a brighter, a better idea. No pun, General Electric. Yeah, the light turned on because now the light actually is radiating from within you outward as opposed to you taking in the information from outward inward. But this is such an intriguing, just amazing subject. That's why I had to begin to write on it, because I know that you want to know this about yourself, and I know that you want to know that you can be pale white one day, and depending upon your focus and your determination, you can be navy blue black in a matter of days by changing your attitude and turning on your TYR genes. You can do this. I think that is just amazing. So we admire the capacity of the amphibian to be able to instantly change the amount of melanin activity, which is why we see it, and then all of a sudden it jumps into the green bushes, and wow, we can't see it anymore. And it's sitting there looking at us. I mean, we have to start beating the bushes and everything to disturb it, because if we didn't do anything, it just totally disappears. It is sitting there right with us. Well, how did it do that? Well, its melanin immediately took on the same vibratory rate and frequency of its surroundings instantly. We have an amphibian brain in our brain. We can do these things with our own skin, and we know that. There are tribes in South America and Africa. They've been documented. They call them the tree people. They're standing right there looking at you. And people who come from the west and they come from the north and they're just beating through the bushes, etc. And the people are standing right there looking at them. And they can't even be seen because they have been able to modulate their melanin reflectivity of light at will. And these are human beings just like us, our sisters and brothers. But their environment has taught them how to use their brain in such a way where they can control their melanin production at will. And so they can blend in directly with the tree, looking right at you. You're like just a few feet away from them, and they're right there, and you cannot see them, just like the frog. So this is a fabulous time. I want you to understand that as this information and research has come together, that really lets us know how incredible we are. This is a great time now to pull your awareness inward and begin to really take this moment to develop yourself and to learn more about yourself so that you can now really understand the transgressions or the intrusions or the disrespect that we've created in our external environment because we did not do what? We did not take time to learn ourselves. The end of our show. Oh, my gosh. I love you all so much. It's been a great show. I had wonderful fun, and I really hope that you have learned from me. Please contemplate what I say. Remember it, and let's build that brain and get rid of that division down the middle of your brain. Let's become whole brain, and I guarantee you that what you heard today will have a whole different meaning to you 1 year later when you now have a unified whole brain. Let's get balanced. Love you all. Good night.
This is the Science of Melanology presented by Dr. Jewel Pookrum. All recorded and printed materials are copyrighted by the Jewel Publications, Inc., a subsidiary of the House of Jewels. Any unauthorized duplication of these materials is strictly prohibited. Our commitment is to connect with those who want to discover and learn the science of life and the science of living. For additional books, MP3, Mayan calendars, Immortal Chat CDs, registration for the balancing program, and the Advanced Balancing Workshop, please visit our website, thejewelnetwork.com, or call 602-559-1842. That's thejewelnetwork.com, or call 602-559-1842. Thank you.